the Financial Sense Lifetime Income Program. Now, here's the Financial Sense News Team.
According to the latest data, U.S. home prices are continuing to cool off, making this the 11th consecutive month of slowing growth. Some areas are getting hit particularly hard, and if this trend continues, it may not be too long before we're talking about this becoming a buyer's market again. Joining us on the show today is Ralph McLaughlin. He is the Deputy Chief Economist at CoreLogic. And Ralph, last time we spoke with you earlier this year, you had said that U.S. home prices were cooling. You weren't expecting a crash. Is that still the case, given some of the latest data that's been coming in?
Absolutely. We're still long run pretty bullish on the U.S. housing market. A lot of demographic reasons suggest that we're going to see increased housing demand over the next 20 years. You know, we're expecting about 45 million new households under 30. They're going to need someplace to live, and we're not building homes like we used to. So still long term, even medium term looks good. So what we're talking about here with respect to possible transition to a neutral or even in some markets, perhaps a buyer-friendly market, really has to do with short-term volatility and not necessarily medium or long-term outlook.
What are the numbers currently that we see for nationwide home prices and the current trajectory as you see it?
Sure. So nationwide home prices are growing by about 4% year over year. That's one of the lowest annual year over year increases since 2012. So we've really seen a cool down in the market. Still, 4% is more than double inflation. So, we are still seeing appreciation in the housing market. And one of the interesting things that we're seeing is that actually a lot of the slowdown is occurring very distinctly along the Pacific Coast markets. So in particular, markets like Seattle, San Francisco, Los Angeles, and San Diego, they are seeing very, very sharp slides. So for example, last year, San Francisco was growing by about, I think it was about 11% year over year. It's now growing by about 1.5% year over year. So that's a pretty sharp slowdown. Seattle and San Diego are following similar trends. San Diego, now home prices are only growing by about 1% year over year. It's pretty unprecedented. We haven't seen such slow growth in San Diego, I think maybe since the mid or late 80s. So it's been quite a while. And we think a lot of that's being driven just by affordability pressures and also increased inventory. So as prices rise, and they've risen very quickly in those specific markets, as many of your listeners would know, they can only rise so much before households just can't afford those homes. I mean, we're talking about median prices in San Francisco of, well over $1 million, in the upper six figures in both Seattle and LA and San Diego. And at the same time that rising prices start to push some buyers to the sideline, what happens is you get some sellers that get excited and want to put their house on the market. And so at the same time we're seeing buyers pull back, we're seeing increased inventory in those markets. And that really creates a sort of a perfect scenario for home prices to slow down. And we've seen them slow down substantially. And at the current rate, I wouldn't be surprised if some of those markets, San Francisco, and maybe in particular San Jose, which has been fairly hot, they might slip at least slightly into negative year-over-year territory here this spring. Now, our medium-run forecast over the next 12 to 18 months actually forecast house prices in some of those markets and also nationally to dip a little bit more, but then we expect them to pick back up. So by this time next year, we expect price growth to actually increase by about 4.5 to 5% year over year, but that's after taking a dip, down to around 2%. We expect this lull again to be a temporary one that's been driven by some recent volatility that we've seen in interest rates over the past 6 months, in the stock market over the past 6 months. And then, of course, uncertainty around what tax changes would mean for homeowners in existing markets. I think that's going to be behind us and that the long run solid fundamentals will continue to buoy up the housing market, over the next 15, 20 years.
Hmm. Okay. So over the next 12 months, it sounds like there's a bit of a window here. If you are looking to buy into the market, particularly maybe in these areas that you talked about where we're seeing most of the slowdown, San Francisco, San Diego, Los Angeles, Seattle, would you say that's the case?
Yeah, I mean, there's a possibility to get into those markets, but you know, I say that somewhat jokingly because they are very, very expensive. So there's a possibility to potentially get a deal on a house if there are sellers that need to get out for whatever reason that you know they're not just going to hang on to it if it doesn't sell. You know, you may be able to get something at a relatively decent discount. I mean, that $1.2 million San Francisco house, maybe you can get it for $1.1 million. You know, so we got to be.
Not a huge deal there.
Exactly. Got to put things into perspective here. But it certainly may take longer for some households to sell homes, and because of that, may be able to get a deal. But for, you know, I'd say your average home buyer is looking to get into the market, unless you've seen a big increase in your pay. You know, house prices have grown so much faster than incomes over the past 5 or 6 years that's left many behind, and a temporary dip, you know, say over 4 or 5, 6 months, probably isn't going to be enough for their incomes to catch up. But, you know, on the other hand, if you're an investor, maybe there'll be some opportunities there. But again, on the investment side, cap rates have been compressed so much in those markets that, you know, unless you're like class A plus, there's not, you know, and returns of 2 or 3% is okay. It's going to be really tough to make something work in those markets.
Okay. So probably want to be looking elsewhere in the U.S. if you are looking to buy a home. As you noted, the temporary dip may not be enough to help affordability in the Pacific Coastal region. And I mean, if we look at wages have been increasing, but I don't know if we see a lot of upside for wage growth. I guess that's still debatable. So affordability is likely still to be with us as a problem. Do you see that as being the case as well?
It depends on which markets you're talking about. I think affordability along the Pacific Coast has continued to be, troublesome for many home buyers. But again, there are other markets where affordability isn't that big of an issue. In particular, the big Texas markets, Florida markets, many Midwest markets, and even markets, you know, outside the big cities in the Northeast, still remain, you know, relatively affordable. And so, you know, those markets are going to be primed for, I think solid home buyer demand, over the next year or two. So there's going to be affordability constraints in areas that, are the least affordable. Any sort of market correction there, is, I think, unlikely to lead to a lot of a lot more affordability, primarily because there's not a lot of housing construction that's happening in those areas. Housing supply is still relatively low, even though inventory is increased. They're just not building a lot of homes in those markets. And that sets a pretty high floor for how far prices can fall, especially since those markets are still adding a lot of jobs. San Jose, which we saw last month, and our other house price index actually had a slight year-over-year drop. It's still added the most amount of jobs, I think, in the U.S. over the last year. So that's also going to help keep prices from falling very far. So I'm not very optimistic that affordability, you know, in those markets that are the least affordable is really going to improve much. But again, that's just isolated to the Pacific Coast markets. Many markets in the rest of the country look very solid when it comes to the balance of job growth, income growth, and affordability of the housing market.
I want to ask you a question about something that you'd said last time that we had you on, and that's what we're seeing now is nothing related to what we saw in the 2005 time period before the big crash, right? And this was something that even Robert Shiller had said in a recent Bloomberg interview just earlier this month. He had said that the one thing that I don't see now compared with 2005, 2007, when the housing market turned the last time, is a lot of talk about speculative excess. The financial crisis of 10 years ago was a record setter, and we don't expect things like that to repeat. I think that's important to point out because the housing market has a pretty important influence on the economy, right? I mean, if the housing market sees a big dive, that's drawing equity out of people's homes. They're less likely to spend. So it has this downward spiral or feedback effect. And so when we think about the current slowdown, as you noted, with some of the tailwinds to keep demand lifted for the long term, and the lack of excesses, it's painting a bit more of an optimistic picture, I would say, for the economy moving forward. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I think that's an accurate statement. If you look at the conditions, like you mentioned, around 2005, 2006, 2007, just before the crash, they actually look quite different than they do now, both from, you know, a macroeconomic perspective, but also a housing market perspective. Housing supply at that time was near record highs. Today, housing supply is near record lows. At that time, home price growth was 10, 11, 12, 13, 14% year over year. It's now 4% year over year. Job growth was really starting to wane in those years. Job growth today still remains pretty healthy. So I think we're dealing with a different animal here when it comes to the housing market and the U.S. economy. And things just look quite different. I think the prospects of a housing market crash or a general economic crash is pretty low at this point. Yes, probably. From a probability perspective, we're sort of due for a recession, but we're also, from a probability perspective, due for a pretty light recession rather than a deep one. And so, you know, the prospects, I think, do look fairly healthy. They don't look too concerning. And in fact, the slowdown in home price growth, I think, is a healthy one. You know, I think if we were to continue through a mature economic cycle where home prices were growing around 10, 11, 12% year over year, I'd get nervous. But the fact that they're sort of coming in at a very easy glide slope for, you know, what hopefully would be a soft and stable landing, you know, that's probably a good thing for the U.S. housing market, especially given what it's been through over the past dozen years or so.
And one last question I'll ask you, Ralph, is related to a topic that we've discussed on our show many times in the past, specifically after Trump made the recent tax changes with the Tax Cut and Jobs Act. Are we seeing that continue to affect the housing market with people perhaps selling their homes in, you know, taking their equity in the Pacific coastal areas where they saw a lot of gains and then moving into the more affordable areas? You know, are you seeing that migration play out?
No, I think it's still too early to tell. I think the theory out there on whether or not it's going to have any noticeable impact on expensive areas is somewhat ambiguous. And until we get tax return data from the IRS, which takes, you know, a year or two for them to release, we're not really going to know for sure. But I think the thinking here, the initial thinking amongst those, including myself, when looking at the possible impact of the Tax Cut and Jobs Act was, well, hey, it's going to be very expensive to live in an expensive property. You know, you're not going to get SALT deductions like you had before. You know, if you go out and buy a new house, you're not going to get as much of a mortgage deduction. And so the actual house in expensive markets is going to cost taxpayers more. That's basically a no-brainer. However, what we don't know, but there's some evidence coming out now, is whether or not overall, thinking holistically, those households are getting a tax cut. Are they paying less taxes aggregately? And so I think there's some evidence out there that even though those households certainly have an increased tax burden relative to their home, their overall tax burden has actually fallen. So their effective tax rates are actually lower. And so the question is, yes, you know, they did lose some money on the house, but they made up more than that on their overall tax cut. And what does that mean for the housing market? So these households do have more money in their pocket at the end of the tax year. And so is it going to be a wash? So maybe some of the initial signs we saw that people may be moving out of these expensive markets to avoid taxes. Well, you know, as people start to file their returns and see, you know, what their overall tax liability is, maybe they're not going to have as much of a knee-jerk reaction because they understand that they're still better off at the end of the year than they were before the tax cuts. You know, it's just going to be the question is whether that extra money that they get, are they going to put it back into the housing market? Are they going to pay down their debt? Are they going to, you know, put it into the market, in the general consumer market? Are they going to put it into other assets? We're not quite sure yet. But I think the overall sentiment, at least amongst the housing mafia that I hang around with, is still too early to tell. And there may be actually an argument that there's going to be mostly benign effects overall.
We've been speaking with Ralph McLaughlin, Deputy Chief Economist at CoreLogic. Ralph, thanks for joining us on the show today.
Thanks so much.
The Financial Sense NewsHour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the NewsHour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the Financial Sense staff and do not take into account listener suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense NewsHour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies mentioned in Financial Sense or arising out of the use of any material on the NewsHour. Please be advised that you invest at your own risk.